Well, the mood's a bit frustrated and perplexed. And I suppose the problem is that the EU wants Northern Ireland to remain within its single market, and the UK wants Northern Ireland to remain within its internal market. And there's a bit of a tussle over that, and there's no agreement on how that can actually be achieved yet. So businesses can't really plan for any scenarios in any great detail. They could commit a lot of capital to making some provisions, but as we can all see, there's so many ways that this could play out that would probably be money badly spent. So therefore, people are sitting on their hands, and just that's not good for the whole economy, because it means there's a slowdown of investment. And that comes against the background. I mean, we were listening in your news reports there of really quite a lot of strong economic activity elsewhere. So this is the time we ought to be investing and really taking advantage of growing economies elsewhere. And so it's an uncertain and unsettling time.
It sometimes feels as though in the Brexit negotiations, the only Northern Irish voices we hear are the DUP, obviously just one strand of the political side of the country, but also, you know, not part of the business community. I mean, does it, behind the scenes, are there closer ties behind the negotiation teams, Westminster and Northern Ireland?
Well, I think one of the unfortunate things about this is that we had the Belfast Good Friday Agreement 20 years ago, and that allowed everybody to have a sort of settled place and to feel confident within their own community. And what this whole Brexit process seems to be doing is really polarising around identity and territory and territorial claims and so on, and that makes it quite a toxic mix. You're right that the DUP are the only party who have MPs who actually take their seats at Westminster. The Sinn Féin have quite a number of seats, but they're what's called an abstentionist party, so they don't take their seats. Yeah. So the only other voice at Westminster, apart from the DUP, is still independent MP, Lady Sylvia Herman. So therefore, that's one reason why they're the only voice you hear. The other is the fact that the arrangement they have with the government for confidence and supply. So they're seen to speak for Northern Ireland, but obviously the DUP were a Brexit supporting party. And I think that changes the narrative quite significantly.
Now, you did mention the Good Friday Agreement, the Belfast Agreement, which has been a large part of the Brexit negotiations, because what it defends has been supported within the EU and the UK's own agreements over Brexit. Look, we're talking about the backstop. There is no agreement at the moment between what the EU wants and what the UK wants. What does Northern Ireland want?
Well, it's interesting that in the absence of a sort of, if you like, a neutral or an agreed political voice, the business community has really been taking the lead on this now and has been trying to work out what would be good for Northern Ireland. The Federation of Small Businesses in particular have, as you would expect, we've turned to our members to say, well, what do you think? So we've held a range of focus groups and other meetings and so on. And from that, really, some very interesting ideas have come forward. The most obvious of those being the concept. If you think the term free port, but then replace it with enhanced economic zone, and the idea being that the whole of Northern Ireland would become this enhanced economic zone, so there would be no need for a hard border between the two parts of the island, and we would sit almost like the union in the Venn diagram, so that we are the trading port between these two huge markets of the UK on the one hand and the EU on the other, and with special circumstances and special arrangements granted, if you like, to Northern Ireland because of that unique situation. And what's coming?
Hang on, but just to you say there'd be no additional border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. Are you saying that the rest of Ireland would be included in this zone? Because I mean, surely things would have to be checked to actually get into this this enhanced economic zone.
Well, what we would see is that coming from Ireland into the UK, they would continue to operate on the basis of existing EU rules and regulatory standards. So there'd be no need for checking from goods coming north through Northern Ireland, but from goods coming from Great Britain across into Ireland and therefore potentially into the EU, there would be a regulatory and compliance system set up that Northern Ireland would operate. That would be hugely to our economic advantage, because it would create, frankly, it would create an awful lot of high quality back office jobs on processing trade and ensuring regulatory compliance. But there are models for this. I mean, for instance, if you look at Singapore, 99% of all trades through Singapore are processed through what's called a single window customs and regulatory compliance system that takes 10 minutes per transaction for 99% of all transactions. It means whatever part of government the trade actually touches. It can all be accessed through this single portal. And we see that if you took this as an opportunity rather than a threat and set up a world-class regulatory compliance certification system, we could actually become one of the most successful trading ports in the Western Hemisphere.
Singapore has had 60 years to work on its trading system and on its political system as well. I mean, we have at maximum until the end of 2020 to work out what happens with Northern Ireland. I mean, you know, this is a very ambitious system to set up within 18 months.
It's very ambitious, but I would say two things. One is that this is a people problem. We're not overcoming a fire or a flood here. We're working out how two sets of countries engage with each other. But the second point is that we're already there because we're already unified. We already have no differences in our structures. So really it's the speed of divergence that you're looking at rather than the speed of convergence. And if you think it probably took us 5 years to get our systems and compliance in order when we joined the EU. So given that we're all sitting on that same level playing field at the moment, this would be a matter of working out in an agreed and managed process, how do we start, or how do we continue trading but start to set up the systems that will enable that?
Well, briefly, I mean, if we were in talks with the EU now, I think what they would be saying is this sounds ambitious, but a potential way forward, but we'll need some kind of insurance policy, something to fall back on if it doesn't actually come to fruition as planned. That's all the backstop is, isn't it? It's an insurance policy. It's a plan of last resort. If that still needs to be set in stone, what would you be suggesting should be in that document?
Well, I think in the absence of agreement around and the absence of being able to cut the Gordian knot so far on this one, I think the appetite is coming forward for this proposal from FSB to become the alternative backstop, and also then for that to become the end state. So that this is the agreed backstop. This is what will be worked towards and implemented to ensure that hard border doesn't arise.
But if the EU wasn't to go along with this, wasn't to, and the UK and the EU weren't able to agree on any kind of backstop, we're going to end up with a no-deal situation and the hardest of borders between either the north and the south of the island, or east and west across the between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. Probably both, let's be honest. Surely your members aren't going to be looking forward to that.
Well, they certainly wouldn't be, but I suppose what we've got to draw on is the assurances from the UK government that they will not see a hard border imposed, and also assurances from the EU that neither will they. So I take your point that there's a logic to that, except that both sides have said they're not going to facilitate a hard border. So in the absence of anybody willing to put in a hard border, you've then got to say, okay, they have to come to some alternative form of solution. And so I say it's a people problem. This is politics. I suppose there's been a great expectation that we're moving towards the 11th hour and some deal will come forward. But I think in some ways that misses the point that Europe operates on a 24-hour clock. So there's been a great heightened sense of expectation recently. But quite clearly, the solutions that have been put forward for Northern Ireland still haven't been acceptable to one side or the other. So I think we have quite a long way still to go before we get the certainty that businesses are craving. One thing I would say, though, in support of this is, at the same sort of stage, back in the late 1990s, mid 1998, the prospect of getting the various sides together to reach what became the Good Friday Agreement probably seemed just as intractable, and yet a deal was done.